The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. We are joined in the studio today by two of the students from the Main Street Journal. Rachel Curry is the managing editor, and you are a senior?
Yes, I am, and I'm actually editor-in-chief.
And who have you brought with us?
I've brought with me Jake Mizell. He's a contributor for the Main Street Journal. He's contributed in the fall 2015 version for us, and he puts out some really good stuff. So,
I'm Jake Mizell. I'm a junior at UD, and yeah, I'm really excited to be on here and to be speaking for the Main Street Journal because I think it's a really well put together and important piece of art that comes out.
What I think is really cool about the Main Street Journal is you guys are a registered student organization. How are you different from the English department's publications? I mean, they've got a literary journal too, I think.
Well, the CESUR is what it's called, actually, or CESURA. They actually get their funds via donations from alumnus, so they actually get to incentivize submitting to CESURA and be able to give money to winners of contests and things like that. So they also have people from the English department helping them, and we're entirely student run, and all of the money that we have is just the money from our registered student organization. So we kind of have to work with what we have more.
So you guys get an allocation from the university to produce the Main Street Journal?
Exactly. Yeah. All registered student organizations do.
Why have you chosen to join Rachel with the Main Street Journal, Jake?
It's definitely cool to be in any publication. It's one of my long-term goals to be more widely published, but it's exciting to be in a more grassroots project that's more student-based. It doesn't have as much university influence. It's not as much influenced by the university, but it's not, nothing's wrong with being influenced by the university, but it's just cool to be like, to have a connection with everyone involved. Like, I've known Rachel before this. I've known a lot of people who are in here. It's just cool to be like a larger part of the community.
How many students are involved in producing the Main Street Journal?
We have about 6 involved in the actual organization producing it. There's myself, there's another girl, Rachel, who's a treasurer, Tyler, who helps get submissions and kind of gets the word out a lot. A couple of people just graduated, so we're going to be looking for a few fresh faces to help create the publication.
So how do people go ahead and get in touch with you if they're interested in the Main Street Journal?
Students can email me directly at rlcurry@udel.edu, or they can email the Main Street Journal submission email, which I'm always checking, which is udmsjsubmissions@udel.edu. That's also where people who are interested in contributing their work can send their content.
Long term, Rachel, is your goal going to be to go into publishing, or are you going to hang with tech writers like me all your life? See, in real life, Rachel is one of my interns over in University of Delaware Information Technologies.
I think it would be really cool to go into publishing. Kind of gets my creative juices flowing a little bit. However, I do realize that I don't want to be bogged down by a passion and feel like I'm forced to do it and ultimately end up resenting it. So I'm kind of open to either option.
And Jake, you're really looking for a career as a writer, creative writer.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate goal, though. I would like to do something that I can, that would leave me time to write creatively, but also allow me to write in a more fiscally responsible way. So I have a business writing, I'm working towards my business writing major. So that will give me, I can write, and it'll be kind of creative, but not creativity I like. I can express myself, and then it would be a job that doesn't eat up my life, and I can still have time to write on my own and maybe get published on the side, which is what some people I've known have done. So that's my long-term goal.
Well, it's not just some people you've known. I mean, there are great poets.
Yeah.
I mean, Wallace Stevens, for example, the American poet who died, in the 1950s, was an insurance executive in Hartford. And people could tell he was writing his poems because he'd walk forwards and backwards and forwards and backwards as he was working out a line, then he'd keep on going.
You know, my favorite author, Kurt Vonnegut, I believe he worked in like a not in a factory, but like outside of Indianapolis, not doing anything involved with writing. So it's definitely a plausible path I have ahead for myself. I'm just got to keep with it. And yeah, I think for writing, I'm sure Rachel can attest to this, you have to keep doing it. Like even when it's hard, you have to continue writing. Just write really bad poetry and really bad short stories over and over again, and then you will get them out eventually.
Rachel, did you tell him about the sonnet I wrote?
No, I have not, but I thought that was really funny, actually.
Sonnets are really hard to write. Any type of formed poetry is really difficult.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Mine was to an amaryllis plant that we had trampled when it fell down into our stairs. Yeah. What goes into producing it, the Main Street Journal? You've got to get students to submit artwork. And what kind of artwork are they submitting? And then what happens?
Well, a large portion of the semester is dedicated to getting the word out for submissions. We accept poetry, prose, and art. If you're submitting poems or works of art, which includes photography, painting, anything like that, we prefer you to submit 3 to 5 pieces, and we'll choose from that if we like any of them. And if you're submitting prose, about 3 to 5 pages of a piece of prose. But aside from gathering submissions, a lot of it is like working directly with the printing company, which we actually do outside of the University of Delaware, and finding cover art, doing layout for the entire book. And we also put on a coffee house every semester, and we try to do that with other poetry organizations on campus.
You mean you host a poetry slam?
Yep. And we change the location and the date every semester, so you just have to keep up with updates, which you can find on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/MSJNewark, or you could just look up Main Street Journal at UD on Facebook. But this semester, I'm actually trying to do a little bit more with poetry slams. I kind of want to do like a more general art slam, so that way it's not just so focused on poetry. That way, maybe if I find a friend who's willing to volunteer their basement, I can like have people hang up their art on the walls. Maybe people can play some music, things like that.
I've heard that poetry slams can be a little jagged and violent.
I've never found it being violent. I know it's like
animated
is probably a better word. It can be difficult, and especially if you get really into more slam like poetry, it's difficult to do it in such a way that doesn't come off as really cheesy or as kind of forced. And that's if you're going to express such like a strong emotion, it's a skill to be able to express it in such a way that doesn't come across as like as almost like funny or like you're purposely over the top. So it can be difficult to do like a slam poetry different way. It's not, I can't write that way, or I cannot perform. It's almost more performance. Like a lot of the poetry you'll see online, and it'll be like two people reading like the same thing, or they'll be switching back and forth. I mean, I don't want to belittle their writing, because it's fine writing, but it's definitely more of like a performance. That's a whole different skill set, I find.
Yeah, it's very theatrical, definitely. But I mean, people don't just do like slam poems. They'll just read like things that are meant to just be seen on paper too, just for the sake of kind of being together.
Or just heard.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, there's just something very different about poetic language, where you're trying to build up things based on the connotations and building up sort of a space around the words that are there. Whereas in tech writing, I'm trying to say, this is the way it is, folks.
But the thing I find for poetry is you have to find, how I write at least, is you find a core phrase. And it's like, okay, this is something good. This is a good string of words. I'm going to try and build on this. And you can't just like start gluing words together. You have to consider, okay, this stanza would be way too long, or this, you know, line would be too long, or this line has too many syllables. It wouldn't come out right. And it is a whole very different kind of writing. And I enjoy that bit of challenge. It's something I still work on. Is coming up with a poem that not only I think, you know, gets across with our feeling I'm trying to express, doesn't sound like garbage, isn't ripped off from something else, which is something I've had to go back and like, oops, this is an old Grateful Dead song. I can't cannot play this, or cannot write this. And then the whole like the biggest level for me at least is making it sound artistic, but have it that extra layer of
intensity.
Yes.
So What'd you bring in to read to us, Jared?
I brought a few poems. I'm going to start off with one I wrote a while ago, and then maybe I'll do something I wrote more recently. Much like one of my favorite poets, Emily Dickinson, I do not like titles, but I can't get away with numbering my poems just yet because that's just a little too pretentious to number your poems and be a 22-year-old guy. This one is untitled as of yet. Probably could have thought of one, but... We call ourselves the masters of the universe. The barriers of weather, gravity, and terrain have been blown apart, just like the gaping death in the ozone. Before the evolutionary chiropractor found us to straighten our backs so we could embrace the stars, the trees kiss the moon, and before life was born, mountains made love to her. 10,000 years before we stole kisses from her to power the AC unit, desert flowers lived 1,000 generations in Death Valley.
What was the phrase that got you started? Evolutionary chiropractor?
It wasn't actually that. It was 1,000 generations living and dying in Death Valley. I had this, I can't remember, I wrote this a while ago, but I remember I was reading a short story by George R. R. Martin, the famous writer of the Game of Thrones books, and I like those books, but I became more interested in his other works, and he had a phrase about these flowers that would live, that could survive in these incredible conditions. And I just like thought like, oh man, that's so cool, because I'm a big nature person, and it's cool to think about, you know, even though it's so bitter cold or it's so deathly hot, it could exist. And then I actually learned there are flowers that live in Death Valley, which is like the hottest place on the planet, and I just went off from there.
When you hear that poem, Rachel, or when you read it for the first time, what kinds of feeling did you get?
Honestly, I think that my favorite thing about Jake's poems is typically the endings of them. I feel like a lot of people say that about yours too. I feel like the endings just bring it all together, specifically the last two lines. I don't know if you want to.
10,000 years before we stole kisses from her to power the AC unit, desert flowers lived 1,000 generations in Death Valley.
It's just like thinking about something going on for so long, you know, the 1,000 years thing. And I don't know. It's just the last two lines of your poems, I think, that always get me, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah, that's something.
So it's like you're saying, like the way Jake tends to write is he tends to build up.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, the last two lines, bam.
Yep. And I hear a lot of his poems. We do this thing called Camp Together. It's kind of like a poetry get together every week where people from Newark, it's only during the semester, not usually the summer, but people from Newark will get together and kind of just like read poems. Sometimes we'll have a prompt from the week before that we bring in and read like a themed poem about, and we'll ask questions for each other and things like that. So I always like hearing Jake's.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's not how we met. We actually had a class together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I didn't realize it was you until like a few minutes into seeing you at camp. Like, oh my God, that's the same Rachel.
Yeah. That happens like to me all the time.
Welcome to Newark. Yeah. And yeah, that's actually how I really got started writing, is my friend Rachel Coyne, who I've known most of my life.
Another WVUD person.
I know. It's like we're all like the same 18 people just to shape the entire campus. and she got me, like, she's like, hey, I'm doing this camp thing. And I was like, okay, I can write. So I can't really draw or play any instrument any very well. And so I got into writing. And yeah, I think camp poetry is definitely how I got more serious in writing. Rachel herself is actually incredibly talented as well.
Thank you. And by the way, CAMP stands for Calling All Artists, Musicians, and Performers, and there's different sectors of it. So like the poetry sector is the one that we typically attend.
Yeah.
Did you bring in one of your own poems, Rachel?
I brought in a few, and they're shorter ones, so I'll see which one I want to read first. Now, unlike Jake, who says like you get started from poems by a phrase. Typically I'm just like sitting there and like notice something around me. It's more of like an experience that gets me started. The following poem is called Mimosas in a Ghostless Room, and I remember sitting at a dining room table in my old apartment drinking champagne out of a Jack Daniel's glass, and that's what got me started for this poem. So you'll understand in a second. Mimosas in a Ghostless Room. Nothing falters in a ghostless room. I don't take it for granted. To French jazz, I can seduce myself and no one succumbs to the blues. I drink champagne in a Jack Daniel's glass. The ambiguity is promiscuous. There is nothing to celebrate, but fleeting bubbles outlast infatuation. The hairs fall off my thighs by way of a razor I keep going back to. Even when no one will see how smooth I make myself. Rigidity is for quitters. I hide the shadow of the flame of a black cherry candle at a supper set for she by keeping the lights dim. Shadows evade if in darkness I wander. I whiff peppermints after dinner to feel the chill waft through my veins and horripilate my skin. There are no shadows, only mimosas in a ghostless room.
Those bubbles outlast the infatuation, huh?
Yep.
What feelings do you get from that poem, Jake?
I get the feeling of something I often feel from Rachel's writing. It's a really great interconnectedness. It starts off with ambiguity, ghosts. Those are two like similar things, and they're woven in very well, excellently together. There's a feeling of like loneliness, but almost like a contented loneliness. Like this is, I'm kind of different from everyone. I'm kind of separated. I'm doing my own thing, but there's, and it's draining on someone in a way, but also I draw some support from it.
Was there any defiance in there? It sounded a little bit like.
Yeah, definitely. Defiance is a good word for it.
Yeah, I think the line where I wrote, at a supper set for she, I capitalized the S in she. I think that's probably the most defiant part of the whole poem. And the part where I say, even when no one will see how smooth I make myself.
Yeah.
Rigidity is for quitters. Definitely defiant. Must have been feeling something at the time.
I think it's so hard. I mean, you come at this from different ways, but it's in all the communication we do, we want to try and get someone to see the idea we have, feel the emotion we're feeling, or react to the idea we have, or react to the emotion we're having. What kinds of images do you have of how an audience will react to your poetry?
To be honest, I feel like everyone interprets every poem differently, at least a little bit differently, and there's going to be just differences in the way someone sees each line. I hope that audiences can see my poems in ways that make a difference in their own life. Like they'll think back to their own experiences and kind of question themselves or question what's going on in their lives, whether it be in the way I think of it, the poem is, or in a different way.
I think there's a lot of poetic language in certain kinds of prose too. And when we say that, I think of it as like a more compact and intense kind of language.
I have a similar feeling. It's definitely more the nature of it. If you write a 600-page poem, you're going to bore everyone to death, or you're writing the Iliad. So I definitely feel like poetry has, in its best space, is in a more compact form. I write, as Rachel knows, in very short poems, nothing more than 20 lines. I mean, I feel like poetry, is, as you said, is definitely more a compacted form, and you have to get a lot of feeling out quickly.
I also write pretty short poems, yeah. And to be honest, I think you can write an extremely long poem all you want, but like to be able to say the same thing in a shorter amount of lines can oftentimes be far more powerful.
There's also a lot that an audience gets out of your poems where they hold these images and they sort of shimmer the difference between them, like in yours, Jake, with the air conditioning and these flowers, or the, what was it, environmental chiropractor.
Evolutionary chiropractor.
Evolutionary chiropractor, you know. And
That was a great phrase.
I was actually super proud of that one because I was like, oh, well, that's clever.
And, I mean, Rachel, I mean, you've got all these different images. You've got razors, rigidity, bubbles, all these different things that someone has to hold. And I think that's how you're communicating. It's like putting these images together and then that they'll resonate differently for different audiences.
Yeah, it's kind of like putting images to feelings too. Like to be able to describe your feelings without traditional, I guess, feeling words, you know? Like you can't just say like in a poem, I feel sad, I feel angry.
Well, there are plenty of bad poems that say that I feel sad.
But to be able to express that with your surroundings or maybe an action, or the way you're performing an action, things like that are really cool.
I have the same feeling where, you know, anyway, you can just say, like, I'm having a bad day. But the, like, able to express it in not a, and I think it's a deeper level, is doing it in not traditional way. It's like, I feel like a rain cloud is over my head. Like just like branching out more abstract feelings. Like it, I feel like that's like how I like to write poetry, is instead of like I feel sad or I feel good or I'm happy, I'm in love, I'm confused, I'm lost, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I feel like that's where you get the, at least for me, the more rewarding poetry to write is not about such
it's not declarative.
Yeah.
It doesn't tell, it shows.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And let's be honest, all poets like obscurity. They like to be obscure. They like to be different. So that can be good and bad. They can go a little over the top sometimes, but...
You don't sound like a fan of T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound. I mean, in grad school, I used to think they were way over the top. It's like, you know, you can't read them without having a bunch of reference books open.
T.S. Eliot is weird that way. How you can read it now, it's like, wow, this is like, these aren't even like full thoughts, not let alone sentences. And it's it's interesting to read T.S. Eliot, but I agree. He's definitely on the more, he's on the farther side of the bell curve of being obscure on purpose.
He wants to write for a culturally literate audience, which is a more elitist impulse than the kind of writing that you guys do, which you're trying to express something
for everyone.
Yeah. I find it more rewarding, at least, to try and find something everyone can like connect to in some way. And how I feel about poetry, and my poetry at least, is I'm trying to say, I'm having this feeling, and I want to tell you about this feeling, but I really, if I'm too much of a, too pretentious to just tell you I'm feeling sad. So here's this poem. Like, I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling hurt. I don't know this thing about my life. I feel like for me, my art is an attempt to like show the viewer or whoever's with the reader or the listener, like, I'm feeling this way. And then, you know, I'm sure you've also felt similarly, and so we can bond all that experience.
Well, rather than just tell me about how you feel, why don't you show me how you feel and read another one of your poems?
All right. So I'm going to read one I wrote. I wrote the last one from last year. And this is one I've written past 3 weeks, and I was editing it this morning because I can never stop editing sometimes. After the last cloud implodes, deserts will bloom as we taste the morning dew one last time. Those fires in the sky just burned out, and now the blind search. You are damned to sensation. See what your fires have bought. Remember the motto of the cannonballs. For years I have searched for your stories, or at least your burned shadow. I have read books, and I've read plenty of books, and heard 1,000 songs and chords, but I keep going back to the crackling crow and her black feather stories. She tells me of her mother, the mountain, how all life was born from her foothills, the womb of the world, and I see those unending plains and know the crow's lament.
I really liked the line that said, you are damned to sensation. And then the rest of the poem kind of picked up on all these sensory images, like fire, clouds, cannonballs, things like that. I don't know. That was really interesting.
Sounded in the desert again.
Usually I'm a big nature, like the setting of my poems is I find is either in the desert, mountains, or rivers. And I've lived in Newark my whole life, so I've only experienced one of those in great more than once, really. But I always find something interesting about deserts, because it's the Mojave Desert. It is mind-bogglingly huge, and it's empty. And there's not a lot of places on Earth that are empty, especially now as the population skyrockets. There'll be less and less empty spaces. And so deserts have always had this. I've always been interested in them, because for the foreseeable future, they will always be empty. They can just not support human life. And I'm interested in such a space that will...
I'm glad you qualified that, because they do support life, just
yes.
not human life.
Yes.
It's a very different kind of life. I mean, it's the flowers that you
mentioned
in your
exactly.
previous
poem. It supports life, but a life that's almost alien to our everyday life is because it's so has to live in such a harsh and extreme conditions.
As I heard you read that poem, that was the first time I heard it, I felt that you were trying to tell me you were a little lonely.
There definitely is some loneliness in there. I was, the second Grateful Dead reference in a podcast.
I heard The Morning Dew.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was wondering if anyone's going to catch that, but I was listening to that song, which isn't a Grateful Dead song. It was like a Canadian folk singer wrote this song, and when I first heard it, I thought it was something completely different, but it's a song about the end of the world. And, you know, I can't walk you out. Can't walk you out because, you know, we're in in radiated hell, essentially. And I kind of got into that apocalyptic notion and how.
See, you're being just like T.S. Eliot. You're putting in a cultural reference. And, you know, 30 yeah. years now, someone's going to need a footnote. Someone's
like, wait, what's this?
This goes off to this Canadian folk song yeah. that was a famous song by the Grateful Dead back when Pigpen was still in the band.
I'm interested in the apocalypse, which is a very average mid-20s guy thing to say. But they're just not in like the swashbuckly, I'm going to be the road warrior or whatever. But just in a sense of how, like all other species in existence and life on the planet has ended. And people have this idea, it's like, no, humanity, though, we're not going to change and we won't be on Earth. But there's going to be a time when there's no people on Earth. And that is such a ingrained part of our society. It's like, we will be here. We will always be here. We can do what we want. We can alter the terrain. We've conquered the planet. And there's just this sense, I have at least, that, you know, we should have more stewardship of the earth instead of ownership of the earth.
Very well put.
Rachel, you want to retaliate with a poem of your own?
Let's see here. Well, we'll go with this one. It's called Futile Perseverance. I'm shivering in iridescence, reflecting what's been brought to light. In such a bitter climate, I bury my feet under the shallow depression of the back of your knees. I've lost my face to watercolor black weeping down my cheeks. In harrowing exhaustion, I blame myself for tonight's burden, craving amnesia. The most familiar decibel, a shrilling silence, rings tryingly. Tonight's a blaring ambulance ride without need for the siren. There's no saving a dead man, but at least they know they tried. There's no saving us, but I'll hold on until I'm pried.
You were coming from a really dark place with that one.
I think I may have gotten in a fight with someone that night.
Sounds like it. The back of his knees, uh-huh.
It's all good now.
Jake, comments?
Wordplay. I really love about your writing. It's so cool how you weave phrases that aren't connected together by just a single word, like the multiple waters, shallow depression in your knee, I'm terrible at this. Something, the water in your eye, what was it?
I think it was watercolor black.
The tear imagery.
Yeah.
Basically, my mascara was wrong.
Yeah. and definitely has that feeling of what's like we've had of like anger, but in like, not a self-righteous way, but in like an anger, like I have made a mistake and I've also done wrong, but I'm still angry at you.
Exactly.
But notice what you did. You didn't just say in the poem, my mascara ran because I was crying. You turned it into an image.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that would have been a little less exciting if I just said my mascara ran down my cheeks.
It's just so much more powerful. I mean, the way you did just even that one little phrase. Well, our time is just about up. So again, thank you so much, Rachel and Jake, for coming in to talk about the Main Street Journal. And again, Rachel, give the sales pitch.
Yes, if you want to be a part of Main Street Journal, feel free to email me at rlcurry@udel.edu, or you can email udmsjsubmissions@gmail.com. And you can also submit your poetry, prose, or art to that email as well. We love to see it or read it.
And Jake, what's the Facebook page?
Is it MSG at Newark?
MSJ Newark. MSJ. So it's facebook.com/MSJNewark. Super simple. And we don't just take submissions from students either. That's another thing I wanted to say. We've had contributors from as far as Humboldt County, California submit. And actually, she was on the cover of our fall 2015 issue as well. We look for cover art.
One of her pictures. Yeah.
Yep. And
it's your friends, the Black Crows.
There they are.
It's all synchronicity, really.
Thank you very much, Jake, and thank you very much, Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1 Newark, or online at wvud.org.